Mr. Hay, Reel 6. Now, we were talking about what a typical day would be like. We've had some sidelines, but you'd arrange this going out, say, if you weren't on defence platoon, then you'd go out with the officer, either the brigade major or the brigadier, and then what pattern would the day follow then, a normal day?
Well, when I knew I was going out with the brigadier, and he had mentioned, he always mentioned where to this guy, when I was passing out of the office to work the car, I got a word to the signals man and said, alert 17th Battalion, alert 16th Battalion. And so I became a friend. It was fair.
Just to make sure he didn't come out of the blue.
Yes. Mind, they knew he was always moving around, so they weren't saying. But it was nice that the news was on the way. And I would get in the back of the car, sit in the back of the car, there's a big Humber, and his dog was there. And we used to get into folks in High Street, and he used to stop. And they're done, at the point, at a rather super sweetie shop, it was homemade chocolates. And he used to go in personally, come out with a bag of these chocolates, give one to the dog, have one himself, and give me one, and then twist the paper up, and I said, that's one. And then, as he was going along, he was looking out, particularly for officers. What do you see? And of course, you're looking for salutes. Because the big day's car, there wasn't that much traffic. But the big day's car was big, and that would be two subjects of these acknowledgements. And occasionally you say, you see, which unit he was from? I think RASC said, what he talked about, or I said, well, these chaps were going to thank him, he didn't give the same reason, but he was dead keen, and at times he would spot somebody from the university, and he'd get on to see one of your men. You know. He wants them to know that he was alert and watching. So when we got to work, wherever it was, he knew from the brigade major what should be going on, how they were progressing, and he'd have his own views and say, right, that's right.
So what would, say he went to the 16th or the 17th, what would happen from the time he got there? Do you see what I mean? What would his visit entail?
Obviously, nobody would look as though he would expect it, but he would go to headquarters, which if they knew them, I was the one who had to know where the headquarters,
the battalion headquarters,
and make his entry easy, and get him there and go and find the CO or get somebody and put, if it was the adjutant or even duty officer, take him out and put him next to the brigadier and say, this is the order officer. Do you want me to find the colonel? And he would say, no, don't worry, I'll go around. Or, yes, I want to see the colonel. Or he'd say, to you have to wait? But I was smoothing his path. He knew what he wanted to do, and he knew what should be going on. And he'd probably say to him, now, where's this company doing something, soft landings or something? And then he would go and watch it. And he would make comments and say, yes, that's why. Do you think that's achieving this? Or, you know, have you visualized? It's not going to be as easy as this. You're going to be being fired on. You might have chaps at your back. And he painted a real war position whenever he went. He said, do you realize you're doing this without the enemy? Now, can you assimilate enemy, have people produce your own enemy and disrupt. And this is, he was trying, you know, money had got through to all commanders, that they had to visualize that the war could start any, could have the enemy at any hour.
So he was, although he was a blimpish figure, he sounds as if he was quite competent as well. Was he up to date in his fighting techniques, you know, or was he may have had this idea of imagine the enemy, but was he up to date with sort of modern fighting techniques, or was he still a bit First World War orientated?
Obviously, it was very First World War, or had been the First World War, but I think his experience, he'd been in the thick of it in France. And this is what he was trying to bring out. Not many people had come about or were spread around who had this first hand information, and having experienced it, he was, you couldn't repeat the civilian side, clocking roads and making it impossible to get here and everything. But he said, all right, don't always use the roads, go across farmers' fields or this, that, and the other. But he said,
so pretend the road was blocked.
Yes. He said, do not use the road because you'll find they will be blocked with this, that, and the other. You've got to make the way across country, adapt concealment, cover, and awareness that the enemy could be just round the corner. So he was painting the picture. So I'm listening to all this, and I'm, you know, that's why I repeat it to you.
He was positive, oh, was he?
Yes.
Or not negative about
no,
things?
No.
So if he saw something wrong, he wouldn't just point it out. He would always offer a solution or a suggestion.
Or a suggestion and say, now, you better rethink, get your officers together, rethink. And also, a battalion had its own training major. Get so-and-so, rethink this one, and do it again tomorrow. Never mind what you had in mind, do it again tomorrow.
Did he ever find things so wrong that he wanted officers removed?
Not the brigadier. Montgomery did. He did it, was doing it all the time, removing people.
So the brigadier had arrived. About what time would he arrive at the battalion on a typical day?
Half past nine.
And then he'd stay the morning, would
yes.
he? Would he lunch with the battalion?
We did. At times, if we're going out and something, he would take our rations with us.
So you'd feed yourselves?
Oh, yes. We just took our rations. But this is again where I had a sale. I was staying at a certain yes, we're better have something.
So sometimes you'd come back at lunch to your headquarters?
Yes, he had other things to do when he got on the telephone. People in seeing, or he had visitors. You see, we were a focal point.
So you wouldn't tend to go out for the whole day, usually?
Oh no, he would keep in touch with, because he was the fortress, it was known as a fortress commander, because it was his show, four battalions, and he was in charge of that fortress, and that had to be kept at all costs. But of course, he had to let the people round about know, to a certain extent, what his plans could be when the enemy arrived. But they had a different job to do. He wasn't in command of them, but he had to know that they were available, the corps commander, and Montgomery, the divisional commander, you know, he would have his own plans for this. But our brigade was totally the security of the harbour at Forks.
So what would you do in the afternoon, you do, if, say, you'd gone back to Sandgate, was it, your headquarters, what would you do in the afternoon yourself?
Well, obviously, if I was with the defence platoon, I would just see that they were getting on doing normal.
But if you'd been out with the brigadier,
I'd probably have to go back to. I'd be told to go and see somebody, take some matches, because they had to keep us busy on our motorcycles, to go here, then, everywhere, make ourselves known. This was the other thing, and a lot of afternoons I'd be going up to a unit pharmacy, and so on. So I had my warrant, I had my placard, they call them, and so on. So, just to let you know, just make yourself known.
So you might spend the afternoon doing that?
Yeah.
And then in the evening, how would you spend your time? In the mess?
Yes. There was a little pub within the garrison grounds, private pub, 300 or 400 miles away, who would say, look, slip in to this pub and let people know.
Now, did you form any opinion about the relative competence of the battalions in the brigade, particularly, I suppose, looking at 16th and 17th?
Yes, I thought they were very competent.
All of them?
They had, the South Staffs are particularly a member, but the 14th was commanded by a man called Chips Appleby, who was well known in the domain. He was a very pleasant man. Wasn't First World War, but good commander, had a good battalion. I got to know a lot of them because I'd known quite a few back then. And the 17th, Mike Hill, was a very competent commander, gentlemanly, but competent. If there'd been a weak battalion, I'm sure Hopper would have changed it.
Now, so you were doing this, how long were you doing this for before things changed?
I think I must have been there 6 months.
And that routine carried on?
No, after Montgomery came, everybody, whether they were clerks or anything else, had to become soldiers, fighting soldiers, and he arranged smaller exercises to start with, particularly in our brigade, where everybody had to get off their backsides, and particularly night exercises, and they had to get a rifle in their hands and prepared to fight. Naturally, this wasn't very popular. It upset things, but as one guy says, so what? If they missed their normal evening meal, too bad. And he disrupted them. He went so far as to say, right, now then, you know what it is to get about. I'm now going to say 12 o'clock midday is 12 o'clock midnight. So you will work through the night as long as daytime and see normal things. So if there was a sense of you saw it at an unusual time, but he just changed the clock by 12 hours, but he was really shuffling everybody particularly outside our perimeter, but even inside, he had exercises where everybody, as though they were driven out of the places, what you do next. And he really showed that was really interesting, but people weren't just allowed to sit day by day doing these secondary jobs. So, of course, that made life a bit more difficult for me because I had to get my defence platoon and follow the brigadier and set up a little headquarters here, there, and everywhere. And protect him and to start at the top.
And how long would your platoon be on that role, or did it become permanent?
Well, I think each battalion took it for 2 months.
How far would you go in setting up a headquarters, a mobile defences for the headquarters? I mean, what would you do when, say, stopped somewhere?
Well, the first thing, of course, we had to find out where the Brigadier's command car was, so we didn't have all of that much transport. I think we had a 1500 weight truck. I didn't have a Jeep, so we had a 1500 weight truck with troops, and the Bren guns, who immediately the Brigadier truck stopped. They got formed themselves around, particularly with the two or three Bren guns on tripods. It was aircraft we were, or parachutes that they were prepared for, and you had to let the Brigadier be assured he was surrounded and that nobody who shouldn't come into his little command post get there. That was the main thing, because you had people coming from all over, and of course Monty sent odd boards around testing these things, so he caught out a lot of people.
One thing about these inspections, whether they're surprise or not, is that often they turn up things that perhaps the colonel of various battalions would rather not be turned up. Did you ever have any sort of amusing or surprising discoveries?
Well, there was, in my book that there was an early old DLI man commanding the 17th Battalion, C. Bag Montefiore. He's been in the regiment a while, a very well-known banking name, but C. Bag went into soldiering. Rather gross sort of chap, but amiable, well met. And he moved on from the 17th Battalion somewhere, but he became an umpire for these exercises, one of the umpires. So somebody was coming and just observing what you were doing. Well, I got to know Seabag. He always knew how to move to where the headquarters were and see what was going on. And on the first one, he said, "Do you set up any mess facilities?" I said, "No, sir. They're now fighting soldiers. They haven't time." So that was the first good point of saying. And I thought, little white lies here and there. And he said, "Let me give you a tip, old man." He said, "Next time you come out, have something in a bottle." He said, "It goes a long way." He said, "It goes a long way to helping me in particular." These were happening quite often. The next time I made certain I had a bottle of whiskey and a glass, and he tucked himself in with his bottle of whiskey and didn't move very far, asked one or two questions, and he said, "That's more in line with soldiering." They'll see back wanting to look it. But otherwise, it was taken very seriously, and you had to be careful, as I said, about these trick questions. What time do you do? We don't know.
Right. So, what's the next thing? You were doing that for about 6 months or so.
I stayed with it for a year, and then I was a lieutenant, and I thought I was coming up for captaincy. So I told the Brigadier, and I said, I thought I was due for some promotion, if I could return to my battalion and secure it. And he always said, "Most certainly," and no trouble at all. And I went back to the battalion.
You hadn't wanted to go to brigade headquarters. Had you come to enjoy it or find it satisfying?
No. I always wanted to. They had a better social life. They had, for instance, the first of bombs every Saturday night they had a dance at the kitchen. The feature. And I used to say to the Brigadier, "May I have the night off Saturday, go to the dance?" And Yes, yes. And then he said, what's it like, these dancers? And I said, oh, I meet my friends, and it's history. And so he said, I have to go. And I said, oh, I don't think we should have gone into that. He said, why not? I said, you're around to start with. And I said, it's very free and easy. I said, it's not like a ball of gum or such thing. He said, fix it. So there was a fellow called Boy Bassett, a colonel to the army. He was in charge of these two mounted guns on a railway that were down there. He was quite a character. We never saw much of the big guns. But anyhow, but in my going round meeting people, I said, who's the best man you know? And I said, look, I've got a problem. Armed Brigadier wants to go. And he said, well, he wouldn't go alone, but he would like a party. I said, do you think you could fix one or two other colonels and some partners for me? Yeah, sure, he said. So I went to Brigadier, I said, would you be prepared to have three ladies, the two other gentlemen? Yes, you think, he said. I said, could we bring them here for a drink in the mess? We won't have to give them any food at all. We could have a little opening before you went, otherwise you're going in there dead flat. And that would be all right. So I fixed this little party. I warned the DNI. I said, I'm bringing the Brigadier. I said, I'm more or less forced into it. So I took them. Nobody liked it, of course, but the Brigadier thoroughly enjoyed it. He said, we must do that again sometime here. We never did.
Sounds like he was a bit lonely, the Brigadier. I mean,
yes,
it's
just... He was. He was... I think he gradually relaxed with me. Probably relaxed with me. But he didn't... I never saw him relax with the Brigade Major or Staff Captain in the way he did. But when we were chatting once in the mess, he said, I used to come out with little quips and jests, the other young ones laughed at him. And he said, hey, never lose that lovely accent of yours. He said, I enjoy listening to it. So, my glory. But it was a nice thing for him to say, wasn't it? Because we had got to know it a little bit, and he asked me a question from it. Different from the... He was still the stuffy chap, but when we were in the back of the car on our own, he would have a little bit of chat. So,
you came to like him then?
Yes. Well, I learned a lot from him. And he was to tell me why he was doing this, what he was doing. And I learned an awful lot.
And his Second World War, his experiences at Dunkirk were more relevant to him now than his First World War experiences.
Oh yes, he said.
Now, you went back to your battalion. You'd been in close touch with them. About what month would it be? Would it be in 1942? So it was a straight year you'd been away.
Yes.
And had the battalion changed at all? Was it still Colonel Morecambe?
But then I went back to the battalion, and Marty arranged, because everybody had a move, he arranged a big exercise called Tiger. And everybody who had been in the force had to get out. And so we started on the mouth. There were a lot of other units. The whole of the southeast was involved. He had everybody, he just moved everybody out of where they were. And so we started on this exercise Tiger. I was back with the battalion and not doing some marching, but in that exercise, which took 8 or 9 days, we marched from Folkestone up to the Thames Estuary, that way round to Lewis, you know, which was in my days, and we were on the move, but there were battle situations, but getting us, the thing I remember at night after the marching was organised, you know, with 50 minutes and stuff. But all the time, you dug a little hole in the ground, you shared a ground sheet, it was filled with water, and then they used to put some disinfectant in, and everybody steeped their feet, and then I had to go around and look at feet. And obviously they got worse because they hadn't done a lot of marching, but here they were doing, not forced marches, but 20 miles a day.
And no lorries?
No, everybody on foot, the whole lot.
Even the colonel?
Yes, even the colonel on foot. There was a cook's lorry followed up for, you got one hot meal a day, but everybody had to march. The whole lot moved around, and other troops came in to take over there. But this was Operation Tiger, still well known, told about by many people, because everybody, no matter who the card is, must have to get marching.
And what sort of feet problems came out of that?
Well, obviously, those who had been in jobs there, all clerks and things, and cooks, they got blisters. But there you are, the MO, not the MO himself, but his staff, there was a sergeant allocated to do things. But they still had to get on marching.
So you weren't allowed to fall out?
No. I mean, you obviously want to do serious case, it would, but you have to get them somehow on. We had to move them on. He said, you'll be taken prisoner. But he wanted to shake the whole lot up.
And what, did you have any particular problems with your feet? And you, at the end of, you mentioned battle situations on the way. What sort of things were
that? No, it was just that they couldn't assimilate the enemy there. But they just say, you've got to keep on the move. You're not retreating. You've got to get the situation where the fighting is. And all right, battle situations, which I can't remember, were concocted all the way. And then you were given a different route. Oh, go there, we had our maps. I say, there were so many troops moving.
So you weren't deploying out, it was just that you would be marching and then your route would be changed.
Your route would change. You were going forward on it just to get your marching, get your limbs moving. And
did the men moan much?
Oh,
which company had you gone back to?
I can't remember.
But you were just acting as a company officer?
Just a company officer. I wasn't offered a captaincy, but that came along.